Welcome to the Leadership Journey podcast. My name is Alan Wilson and I'm the host of the podcast. Each week I'll be chatting to various Christian leaders, discussing some of the things that have contributed to the story of their leadership, and at the same time encouraging you to reflect on your own leadership journey. You can subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, look for the Leadership Journey podcast, or we've just recently been listed on CastBox if you want an alternative podcast player. This week, Clive Atkinson is back to continue the story of his leadership journey. Clive is chaplain of All Saints Church in Vevey, a church serving the international community around the shore of Lake Geneva in Switzerland. We talk about Clive's early experiences of ministry around Belfast and the subsequent sense of call to leave Northern Ireland for Switzerland with the somewhat steep learning curve that awaited him. And I asked Clive what advice he would have for a young 22-year-old version of himself looking out on his leadership journey. Enjoy the podcast. Well, Clive, welcome back to the podcast. We're going to pick up your story. I think we got onto something of a digression towards the end of the previous episode. We were talking about just ways in which churches can support people in terms of, I guess, Christian leadership and Christian work in the secular workplace. So yes. Stuff that's done outside of the walls of the church. But I want to take us back to Dublin. You've gone to Dublin to be trained for Anglican ministry. Training comes to an end. What comes after that? What were the first couple of postings like for you?
I did my curacy, my assistantship in North Belfast in two churches, Holy Trinity Joan Mount at the top of the Old Park Road, T-junction with the Ballysillan Road, and Emmanuel Ardoyne. And so I was there for 4 years with two rectors, Jim Campbell and Stuart Heaney. And I know you know Stuart quite well from Belfast Bible College.
It's Irish Baptist College, actually, an Anglican who's been doing his doctorate at the Irish Baptist College. Yeah,
I didn't know that. I must mention that to him.
I don't think he's become a Baptist. Like, I don't think that's happened. But yeah, so that was four years you spent there.
Yeah, four years in North Belfast, and then my first incumbency in West Belfast, just off the Andersonstown Road in Suffolk Estate, a wonderful congregation, wonderful church called St. John the Baptist, right beside Woodburn RUC station, or what was RUC station way back in those days.
RUC, for the uninitiated, the Royal Ulster Constabulary, which then became the Police Service of Northern Ireland. So you were there. So West Belfast.
West Belfast, and I was there for 5 years. Before we then moved out to Switzerland.
Yeah, and interestingly, if I could just say, and again, for the benefit of people who don't maybe appreciate the geography of Belfast, both of those areas, neither of those areas would really have been totally Protestant areas. There would have been interfaces to some extent in terms of the Troubles. What was your experience of that?
I mean, certainly, yeah. I mean, Ardoyne was an interface area, so was Suffolk Estate. There were moments of tragedy in both those parishes. We had the peace line running through both of them, particularly Suffolk Estate. You would have experienced regular rioting. On one occasion, a local paramilitary was murdered. On one memorable Sunday morning, a bread van had been driven up and left outside the Woodburn police station. And halfway through our service, a police officer walks in and speaks to our welcomers at the back. And this welcomer walked forward and told me that they suspected there was a bomb inside the bread van. But they reckoned that the safest place for us was to stay inside the church. And I kid you not, we were reading Romans 8 that morning, nothing can separate us from the love of God. And the person who was reading the scripture that day came to that verse, and this bread van went up. And to the credit of the congregation that morning, we just moved on with the service. to come outside after the service to find bread everywhere. It was just one of those moments, those really fascinating moments of being in West Belfast. But I have to say that being in North and West Belfast were such formative times for me personally. And I certainly have experienced the Lord at work here in Switzerland, but there were moments, particularly in Suffolk Estate, where he was at work in such a beautiful way. You know, people coming to faith, people growing in faith. I look back on those 5 years, particularly in Suffolk and St. John the Baptist. Those were wonderful years, wonderful community, great Christian people. And we had a lovely, lovely relationship with the Baptist church at the bottom of the road with us. There's a pastor there called Alistair Campbell, who was just a fantastic guy.
He's a great guy,
Great memories of working with him as well.
Yeah, that's good. Formative times, what were some of the things you were learning as you went through that stage of ministry?
I mean, in church, inner city churches, there's not a huge huge amount of resource that you can use, and so we just simply praying and asking the Lord to move. We did things. It was sort of the time whenever servant evangelism was really to the fore, and so we would go around and knock doors, and at Christmas we would give away Christmas presents, which was a New Testament and a bar of chocolate and Easter white cream eggs. We began to really connect with the community. We ran an alpha course, another series of alpha courses during my time there. And on one alpha course, there was a lady called May Croker, became a Christian. And May was wonderfully saved. And one Christmas, we had a Christmas carol service in the local community centre. And May gave her testimony, and we sort of advertised this around Suffolk Estate, and the place was packed, and it wasn't packed with the congregation of St. John the Baptist. It was packed with people from the community, from Suffolk Estate, and May stood up and gave her testimony about what the Lord had done in her life, and it was just an amazing occasion. She told me afterwards that she had been walking through the local co-op about a month later, and she met one of the senior members of the local paramilitary group, who stopped her and thanked her for giving her testimony and shared with her how he had come to faith as a young man, but lost his way. And that what she had shared had profoundly impacted him, and so there were things like that went on, that just people praying their hearts out and sharing their faith and trusting God and seeing things happen like that. Mm. It was just beautiful.
Mm. So, how hard was it to leave?
It was hard to leave people. They're just the friendships that you form you know, in the crucible of working in the community and doing outreach and stuff like that, there you form friendships, and so leaving people was hard. Leaving Northern Ireland and leaving family was very hard. To cut a long story short, it was actually during the interview process and the discernment process for moving to Switzerland that we discovered that my mother's cancer had come back, and that it was terminal. And a very strong memory of Yvonne and my wife and I sitting down with my mum and dad and asking for their permission. Mm-hmm. And their blessing on us leaving, and just to hear both of them release us to go and do what we sensed the Lord was calling us to do. That was hard. Mm. And moving country, taking your kids with you and going to a completely foreign country, that was frightening, But you know, at the same time, it was hard, but it was exciting as well. But we had an overwhelming sense that, yes, this is what the Lord was calling us to.
How did you get that sense that the Lord was calling you? What were some of the things that were maybe preparing you for that, or ways that you felt, you know, sort of sensed God speaking to you?
Well, it was over a, probably a 12-month period. Dave Healy, who I mentioned, was a travelling secretary for UCCF in my Queen's days, had gone on to work for this Anglican mission agency, Intercontinental Church Society, ICS for short. And Dave had been sort of telling me a little bit about that mission agency, had been encouraging me to find out more about it. And it ended up he had connected us to the mission director of ICS at that time, who we went and had a conversation with. I should say that Yvonne's mum and dad had been living in France since the late 80s, where Dave had moved from Coleraine to Strasbourg for work reasons. And we had, whenever we had gone and worked or visited them, we had worshipped with them in an English-speaking Anglican church in Strasbourg, and which intrigued me, but I really hadn't thought much more about it. But then I connected English language ministry through this mission agency, ICS. And that conversation with the mission director woke something in us, in both of us. And this was something that was really, really important for us, that it wasn't just something woken in me, but it was actually something woken in Yvonne as well. Mm-hmm. And that made us sit up and take notice that actually God was speaking to both of us about this, and we thought we needed to take this seriously. And so we went through, we agreed to receive profiles of Anglican churches in the French-speaking part of Europe that might become available. And we received two or three, and really none of them connected with us. But then we received the profile for All Saints Vevey, and something there just connected with us. There was something rang true in our hearts and minds as we read the parish profile and thought, yeah, okay, this is somewhere where we could go. Alan, I could talk about this for hours, but there were a series of other things that happened, you might describe as coincidences, where we saw God's hand.
Give us an example of it.
So one being that we applied to be interviewed for this post, and we got a phone call about a day later to say that we'd been accepted for interview, and the interview date was X. And we suddenly realised that was the day that we were going on holiday. We had booked our flights. We were going to visit Yvonne's mum and dad in France. And so we phoned them up and said, listen, we're going on holiday. Can you do anything about it? And their immediate reaction was, sorry, that's the interview date. We can't change it. So yeah, sorry about that. And about a week later, we were devastated by that news, because we were beginning to invest ourselves mentally and emotionally in this. Mm-hmm. And to hear that we weren't going to be interviewed was really difficult. But a week later, the mission director phoned us back to say that he had been to Vevey, that he had talked about us, and that representatives from Vevey had agreed to come a day earlier to interview us. And so we again, that was just something that struck us as being quite interesting. And so we went for interview. We flew to the UK, had the interview, flew back. Then the next day flew out to France. And we arrived at Yvonne's parents' apartment in Strasbourg, sat down, had a cup of tea, and the phone rang. And it was ICS to say that they were offering us the post. Now, the next chapter of this involves you, brother, and I don't know, did I ever tell you about this?
Yeah, I know where you're going with this. the first Sunday that you ever went to All Saints and Vevey, there was a guy from Northern Ireland preaching. Okay, tell us the story.
It was a wonderful sermon.
Tell us the story.
So after the phone call, part of the phone call was agreeing that as we were in France, that we would drive down to Switzerland and have a look at the church. And so we drove down on the Friday night, we met with the church leadership team. We sort of walked around the Riviera a little bit, and by the Saturday night, both Yvonne and I looked at each other and said, we can't come here. We were, it was so different. It was, as you know yourself, Alan, the Riviera is just one of the most beautiful places in the world.
We should say it's the Vaux Riviera in Switzerland. Not that you've gone all the way down to Nice or something like that. But yeah, the area of where Vevey is, it's also the Riviera. Yeah.
Yeah. And so it felt like us that it was cheating, that this wasn't ministry, this was going on holiday. And on a Saturday night, we prayed together and we said, Lord, we don't feel we can come here. If this is of you, then you need to step in and tell us. And the next day we went to worship at All Saints, and very, very few people knew that we were there apart from the core leadership team.
I did. But
they had a guest preacher by the name of Alan Wilson. And Alan, this preacher, this wonderful preacher, started his sermon with the line, if you want to walk on water, you've got to get out of the boat.
Oof. Which is not originally to me, obviously. I picked that up.
So everything that you said that morning was written for us. And Yvonne and I, at the end of the service, looked at each other and we both said, we think the Lord has spoken. And by the end of that weekend, we had said yes to going to Switzerland.
Mm. I remember the Sunday quite well. I had, your predecessor, Derek Frank, used to have me come preach when he was on holiday. And then obviously at this particular point, Derek had moved down the lake to Geneva. He had become a Baptist. He'd gone down the lake to pastor the Evangelical Baptist Church of Geneva. And I was preaching, and I remember before the service saying to some of the leaders, as a matter of interest, how do you go about finding a replacement? And they said more or less something like, well, don't tell anybody, but there's this guy who's here today. And obviously it was you, and there you were in the congregation. So I mean, for me, that's a privilege to have had that little part that God used me, even though I was unaware of the ways in which He was going to use me.
Yeah.
So you accepted their invitation. Again, with fear and trembling still, or sense of we shouldn't be doing this because it's such a nice part of the world.
I think it was rather like my experience of call to ordination. Once we sensed the Lord had spoken, that a tremendous peace came with that, and it was a sense of, okay, this is resolved. We now know where we're going. We now know what the next step is. And for us, it was full steam ahead after that. And that was July 2002, and we flew into Geneva on the 15th of October of that year. Mm. It's incredible to think that was 16 years ago.
Sorry, technical issue. It's one of the hazards of being on Skype. You have to be online, and of course, somebody else can come on the phone. But anyway, that's okay. 17 years. What was the learning curve like moving from inner city Belfast parishes that you've been working in to moving to an international church?
I thought that working in West Belfast was a steep learning curve. It was nothing compared to when we came here. I've described it repeatedly to people that this was it was like a vertical learning curve, and it has continued to be a vertical learning curve for most of the 16 years that we've been here. It has been a wonderful blessing without any shadow. I mean, we wouldn't be here if it hadn't been. It has been an exceptional blessing. It has been exceptionally challenging as well, on many different fronts. But yes, I have learned so much as a result of living here and working and ministering here.
Give us some examples again, just to, maybe fill that out for us a little bit. Some of the examples. It's a very interesting expression that it was a vertical learning curve. What was so different? Where were the places that you found yourself just pitched in at such a steep curve?
Well, we were in a foreign country, It was no longer Kansas. It was a very, very different place. And so learning to adjust to living in a new in a new country with a very different culture, very different way of doing things. Placing our children into French language schools and parenting our kids through that, that's never ceased to be challenging. But again, God has shown himself immensely faithful, faithful there.
How old were your kids when you moved?
So Jacob was four and Rebecca was one and a half. And so Jacob went straight into Swiss French language creche. And so he was thrown into an environment where he couldn't speak the language. Now, as everybody knows, children pick up languages really, really quickly. And so he was speaking. He was able to communicate within six months to 8 months. Becca was a year and a half, and so she was. It was another year to year and a half before she went to creche. And then they've stayed within the Swiss education system. And as we were chatting about earlier on, both of them, Jake's in his last year of school, and Rebecca's got a year and a half to go. Both of them are currently, I guess, what we would describe as sixth form college back in Northern Ireland. And they are, they're now both Swiss citizens. They are culturally more Swiss than they are Irish. They speak English with a wonderful Northern Irish accent, and they speak French with a beautiful Vaudois accent, but very much Swiss in their thinking and in the way they see the world. And I think for both of them, irrespective of what happens to us, they would likely stay here, go to university here, and settle down here.
Obviously, then you've had to help your children through the challenge of and Swiss education system is a tough system, and that's certainly not easy, and I know that from experience of my own kids going spending time in the system. What about in terms of leadership and church ministry? What were some of the very steep challenges that you were facing there?
Yeah, I mean, rightly or wrongly, I came to a congregation that was multicultural, multi-denominational, but full of professional people. Reve is Nestlé's world headquarters, and so we had a congregation populated heavily by people in senior leadership and management in Nestlé. And so I had a sense that when I arrived that I really had to up my game. I wouldn't want to say that was the most godly of motivations, but that was something that certainly sat with me. So I also was conscious that whenever I came to Vevey, I was coming into a church that had come to the end of a very major building project that had left the congregation slightly divided, because it was quite a difficult building project. But there was also a sense of, right, we now have this new building. How are we going to use it? How are we going to use it for mission? And so there was, if you like, there was a blank piece of paper, and I was being invited to write on it. And so there was a significant sense of expectation that I was feeling, either rightly or wrongly. And I think also, I mean, I was 35 when I first came. I felt the reality. I looked around the congregation and I saw people who were significant leaders in their places of work, and that I find quite intimidating and quite threatening. And found myself having to wrestle with those fears and seek to lead the church into this. Opportunity that was before us.
Would you find also with that leadership thing that because there are all these high-powered leaders, let's put it like this, sometimes high-powered leaders can have opinions, and we were joking with this with some friends from our old church that we have spent time with recently, that you put 10 people from our church around a table and you have 11 opinions. And would you have found some of that?
I mean, certainly these guys were, men and women, were not afraid to express their opinion, were very articulate, and the opinions that they expressed were expressed very, very confidently. And it, one of the real benefits of being in that environment, it taught me that I had to be thought through, I had to be prayed through, I had to be thought through. I had to work hard on articulating my own opinion. At the same time, it also drew out of me the need to be able to build these strongly opinionated people into a team that were willing to work together.
Yeah.
And I mean, looking back over 16 years, that doesn't look too bad now, but when I was in the middle of it, that was tough.
Have you had the opportunity to reflect on how you managed to do it? I mean, for one thing, how did you manage to stay there for such a long time? But you've done more than just survive. There's also been, you know, you've been thriving in there. You've been doing a good job. So have you been able to reflect on how you've done that? Are there some things that you would say, this is a decision I made, and because of this, this is what's happened?
Sure. I think I started out where I felt that in terms of building team, I needed to build relationships with people, and help people build relationships with each other, that to help people see each other not just as differing opinions, but as brothers and sisters in Christ. And so emphasizing relationships, emphasizing gathering together for simple things such as eating, yeah. Gathering people regularly to pray together, so that we weren't just simply listening to each other's opinions, but actually seeking the Lord's leading,
yeah.
Together, and not just simply coming to a consensus with a variety of opinions. But it was something that I took on board, that I had to build teams of people who recognized the need to seek the Lord for the Lord's leading, and recognize the value of each other.
Yeah.
Now that's reflecting on it, looking back over 16 years, and it probably felt more intuitive at that time rather than something that was intentional.
Yes, but that's helpful. I think sometimes there are things that we do that are intuitive, but I think it's helpful for listeners to have some sense of, well, I haven't a clue how I'm going to do this, but here are a couple of things that I could try putting in place. And I like what you say just about that idea of time to build relationships, time to pray together. I think those things are hugely important, not least when you have, as you've described, this very strong group of people around you. Can I ask you, you know, that's into your 17th year. I know it's a bit different in an international church from what it is, say, in a parish here in Northern Ireland, because, you know, international churches are churches with revolving doors where people are constantly coming and people are constantly leaving. So the congregation stays fresh. It's not quite that you can preach the same sermon cycle every 3 years, but there's a freshness that comes from that sense of the revolving door. But having said that, to stay there in one place for such an amount of time, have there been things that you've done that have helped you to keep fresh or helped you to keep growing as a leader?
Sure. I mean, certainly I think being... And that the whole idea of the dynamic of an international church with a revolving door, and certainly the congregation of 2018 is a very different congregation of 2002. Things change very quickly here. I remember hearing a vineyard pastor, a guy called Steve Nicholson, once say that the best gravy only comes after 12 years. And I always was impacted by that, by the thought that you actually needed to stay somewhere for a good length of time to really shape it and impact it. And so that was something that was always in the back of my mind. In terms of staying fresh, I would need to be honest and say that I haven't always been very, very good at this. However, getting away, attending conferences, some study, something that's profoundly impacted me, and I know, Alan, that you are involved with this, was the Arrow Leadership Course.
Yeah, I was involved in that a little while ago, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was profoundly shaping. I think intentionally meeting with other leaders,
yeah,
and sharpening swords together.
Yeah.
I think for me, having a core group of friends that are friends, and people that I can unload with and who will pray with me, and love me and support me, that has been profoundly important. And I just would not be here today if it wasn't for Yvonne,
yeah,
my wife, who has just been incredible over the last 16 years in terms of supporting me, in terms of, I don't use this lightly, but look, she's long-suffering, because I don't think I've been easy to live with over the last 16 years with the variety of pressures, but she has been an incredible partner, and has helped stabilize me and helped me, earthed me, if you like, and loved me and supported me through difficult times. If I wanted to come back to this whole area of friendship, for me has been key. Key having close friends, good relationships, people that I can be accountable to, people who will be honest with me. And I guess also a habit of having what has turned out for me annual reviews with our leadership team, who have who I would sit down with once a year, and they would review my ministry with me, not from the point of view of looking for reasons to throw me out, but wanting to say, you know, this is great, this is really strong, can we help you get stronger in this area or that area, mm-hmm, providing me with the resources to do that. So an honesty among my leadership team, who are actually there to support me and to see me thrive.
Yeah,
That's been something which has been critical as well.
That's wonderful, and I think, you know, I think the value of having a leadership team within the church who are committed to your development as a leader. I know that in my time in Westlake Church, that was the case there, where those guys were very keen to support me in doing things that would help develop my ministry and develop my leadership. The friends thing, Clive, is that, are those folk, I know this is a bit of an old chestnut for people in ministry, are those people within the church, or are they people that you've gathered from other settings?
So it's both for me. I have a very, very close friendship with my brother-in-law, who I would not hesitate to say is my best friend. He probably knows me better than anyone except Yvonne, who I can say anything to, and who has permission to say anything to me. Mm. And now that's a friendship outside of All Saints. I probably see John about half a dozen times a year at most, but whenever we connect, we just pick up where we left off. And I mean, I do recognize this tension between, you know, should we have friends within our community, our church communities? Do we need to stay sort of, do we need to remain slightly distant? I don't know what you think about this, Alan, but I mean, certainly within an international church where if you're the only English-speaking church in town, it can be quite isolating. And so perhaps the only friendship network available to you are actually people within your congregation.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things about having senior leaders within your congregation is I think they recognize that. They recognize the boundaries between being friends and congregational members. And we've been able to navigate that boundary well. And there are about four or five guys within church who I pray with regularly, and who have become close friends, and we can go out, we can have a laugh together, we can talk about everything other than church, but there are also times when we can sit down and talk about church at a very deep level.
Yeah.
I'm blessed because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I want to ask you as well, you mentioned about staying long enough in a church in order to make an impact, and you know, you shape the church through your ministry over a period of time. My observation is that it's also true that the church shapes you. Your context shapes you and shapes your ministry. Have you found that to be true? Maybe that's maybe a hard question to answer until such a time that you might ever, you know, move into a different ministry setting, and then maybe it's only then that you realize how much your context has shaped you. But do you have any sense of that at this point?
I was back, I think I was mentioning to you, I was back a couple of weeks ago involved in a church weekend in Belfast in what is effectively an inner city context. And I was struck by just how the ministry approach in an inner city context was different from a ministry approach to a professional congregation. Yeah. And I was like looking at a mirror and seeing myself and seeing how I had changed or adapted from 9 years in inner city Belfast to 16 years in Vevey. Also, the exposure to an international congregation of a variety of cultures, of a variety of denominations, that there is a richness in that, which I am just so grateful for. We reluctantly let go. But that shapes you in terms of your view and understanding of the local church and the global church as well.
Yeah.
But yes, I have been shaped by that international dimension of our church. And I've been shaped by the fact that I'm living in the center of Europe. I'm living in Switzerland. I'm no longer living in Ireland. You cannot but be shaped by the culture that you're living in.
Exactly. Yeah. Clive, we're almost through with our time here, but I want you to think about, imagine that you're sitting and on the other side of the room is young Clive, who's 22 years old. He's just graduated from Queen's with a degree in chemistry. He's turned down the possibility of a PhD, and he's going to, just about to begin this exciting journey of training, ordination, and ministry. What are some of the things that you would say to young Clive, things that he should be watching out for, things that he should be putting in place in order to prepare the journey of the next three decades?
Brilliant question. If I was speaking to young Clive, I would probably want to say, in no particular order, I would say that leadership is a long-term journey. And the Clive of 50 and the Clive of 22 are going to be two very different people. And so be patient and expect to change and expect to grow into the calling the Lord's given you. So I probably would want to say that leadership is a long-term journey. I would want to say to myself that the highest calling on my life is to Jesus first and foremost, and not necessarily to his church. It's one thing that the Arrow Leadership Course taught me again, is that my relationship with the Lord is above all my highest priority. And out of that relationship, out of sort of remaining in the vine, mm-hmm. remaining close to Jesus, flows everything else. And I would say that to myself is never, ever, ever shortchange your devotional life. Mm-hmm. That's where ministry comes from. I guess I would also want to say is the Lord is faithful, and you can trust him in every situation, and not just for yourself, but for your family as well. And that you can trust him with your children, and you can trust him with your marriage, as well as trusting him in ministry. Adding to that, I would want to say to myself, you know, that the Lord loves the church more than you do, Clive. Actually, he's more for the church than you are. And he is at work, and trust him to be at work in you and through you. So I would probably want to say those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. That's really terrific. And I realize that I've worded that question maybe in a way that you weren't quite expecting to get it. those are great. And I think those are they're just such fundamental things that I think any young aspiring Christian leader, any young Christian, there's so much wisdom there to put in place. Clive, it's been really good to chat. Really appreciate your time, and thank you for coming on the podcast. And I just wish you God's blessing as you continue to lead the church in Vevey.
Thanks, Alan. And it's been a real pleasure. And thank you for these podcasts. I'm loving them. Just great what you're doing. So thank you very much.
Well, you're going to love these next two anyway. The ones with you.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm listening to them.
All right. God bless. Bye.
Cheers, mate. Take care.
Thank you to Clive for being with us these past 2 weeks on the podcast. And thank you too for listening. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Castbox. And remember too that you can post a review. Next week's guest is Edwin Ewart, the principal of the Irish Baptist College. Come back to hear Edwin's story next week. And in the meantime, have a good week.